Welcome to tonight's city council meeting. The meeting is called to order. I kindly ask our city clerk to please take the roll call.
Chuck Brown.
Here.
Ralph Santino. Dorothy Flanagan.
Here.
Sam Hill.
Here.
Craig Maladra.
Here.
Richard Marks.
Here.
Rick Pollock.
Here.
Robert Piper.
Here.
Ron Singer.
Here.
Don Vogelsberg.
Here. Oops. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 150 or so men and women who volunteer their time and service on the different appointed boards and commissions, and it looks as if we have just one with us tonight. So with that, Mr. Zach Plaupert, you have to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
All right.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Zach. Item 3A, ladies and gentlemen, is consider the mayor's appointment of Ralph Dantino to the Mental Health Board.
So move.
Vogelsberg makes the motion and Singer makes the second. Mr. Dantino is so moved that he couldn't make it tonight. but let me share with you Mr. Dantino's interest as the cameras now watch him walking in late.
I'm here.
Let the record show that Mr. Dantino has arrived at 7:02. Ralph, you've been nominated and seconded to serve on the Mental Health Board.
Thank you.
Ralph came to me about a month ago and said, you know, that it's something I'd really like to do. As all of us know, historically, we've always had a member of the city council serve on that board, but it's not been a necessity that we do so. Ralph, I think, brings to that board a unique sense, a unique perspective, and obviously the genuine caring that is needed on that board, so I'm more than pleased to suggest Mr. Dantino as serving in that capacity. So we have a motion by Vogelsberg, a second by Singer. All in favor of the appointment, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed?
I heard Ralph.
Thank you. Item 4, amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments tonight? Item 5 is the omnibus agenda. All items marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine, unless Zach Plaupert wishes to remove an item from new business.
So moved.
Motion by Brown.
Second.
Seconded by Marks. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollock.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Ron Vogelsberg.
Aye.
Thank you, everyone. Item 10, municipal bills for payment. Mr. Clerk.
Bills for payment total $759,417.08.
Mr. Mayor, move that we pay the bills as read and as displayed on the city's website.
Second.
Well, look at that, folks. Quick draw. Flanagan makes the second after.
Oh, I lost two, so I had to jump in.
Any questions or comments? Mr. Clerk, kindly take the roll.
Chuck Brown.
Aye.
Ralph Dantino.
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan.
Aye.
Sam Hill.
Aye.
Craig Maladra.
Aye.
Richard Marks.
Aye.
Ray Pollock.
Aye.
Robert Piper.
Aye.
Ron Singer.
Aye.
Ron Rosenberg.
Aye.
Item 11A, ladies and gentlemen, consider resolution number 2009-68, authorizing the execution of construction engineering services agreement with Engineering Enterprises Incorporated in the amount of $85,092.59 for federal participation for Caneville Road LAPP project.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion was by, I believe, Mr. Fire. Was it by?
I beat him.
Was it by Hill?
Or Hill.
You did arrange Hill, and the second was from Mr. Marks. Questions are coming. See, McKittrick smiled at me and kind of grimaced, so I kind of lost my focus. Questions or comments regarding the LAP project? We, of course, have our city engineer with us tonight, who I know is eager to answer the questions.
Questions, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Maladra.
Well, Mr. Mayor, at the committee of the whole meeting, there was some question, I think, about why we chose the firm that we chose. And I'm not sure that I actually understood the answer. So I know from talking to her earlier that Pam came prepared to explain what goes into that decision-making process. So it would be okay if she explained.
Sure, that. Pam, what do you think? Just be mindful you're on television. So this will come back to haunt you if you choose not to answer correctly. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to come before all you all to discuss the process of how we choose our engineers, and then even more important, how we arrive at a dollar figure. So this is the last phase of this project from an engineering standpoint. It's the construction phase, and normally we would try to stick with whoever did the planning and design, which was EEI. But this is why I thought it was so important that I come and offer a little more detailed explanation of how we arrive at the dollar figure. When they come in with the engineering agreement, they use IDOT forms where they've said, here's how many hours we think it's going to take us to work on this project, and here's who will work on it. And that's how they derive the cost. Well, when we first got the forms for this project, it ended up the final cost was $138,000 for engineering on this project. Now you can see that the cost presented to you was $85,000. And the way we arrived at that final cost was not saying that's too much, we aren't going to pay that. We look at the hours, because that's really the critical part of it. When you realize we don't bid engineering, so the money's not an upfront discussion. So what is upfront is the amount of hours worked on it. When we looked at their hours, there were certain tasks that, based on our experience, we felt you have excessive hours here. I'm just going to throw an example. This is a federal aid project. It requires significant documentation and paperwork. It's just an enormous amount of work from that perspective. But setting up the books for it is really very easy, and they had about 3 or 4 days to set up the books for this project. Now, IDOT sends you all the stuff. It's really not a 3 or 4 day process. I've done it many times myself, so I questioned, why are there 3 or 4 days of several people working on this? And so that's just one example of how we went through the whole task list with the people involved. Another quick example is they've decided to have 2 people on the job full time, but then they also had another person stopping by for several hours a day. Well, this is not the type of job that needs that type of inspection. We would not provide it like that. Why are you? And so eventually we got down to the hours. Now you have to be careful, because maybe if we're very experienced and it would take us, maybe it would only take me an hour to do the books, I can't say I expect your firm to do it in an hour, because you pretty much have to find some average amount of time. You'll end up with a lesser quality project if you've cut them down to the very minimum, because maybe their staff or their people just can't do it as fast as you could. So it's kind of a balance of not giving them whatever, but finding an average time that they should spend on each one, and then coming to terms with that. So I don't know if anyone's ever really explained the hour thing and the task, because that's really the heart of how you negotiate an engineering contract. Then you play out through the numbers based on the cost that they verify these are their payroll costs, and they go through the IDOT costing. But in the end, it really is those hours, and you rely on our experience to be able to say, this is excessive, you know, cut it down. And obviously, if they refuse, then you would go on to another firm, but I've never heard of a firm not negotiating. So if ever you get a contract like this, I would encourage you to look at those hours before you look at the price. And if ever you said, why are there so many hours to do this, put books together, go to meetings, I would really encourage you to ask us, because you know, that's where we're hitting it hard. And I think that's where the questions can really be answered. The cost is what it is. It's an engineering cost, and it's pretty average for this type of work. The other little trick, if you want to call it, and this is what we use too, is to look at the percentage of the construction cost. When we first got this, my first tip off was, this is 15%. That's the maximum they're allowed to charge. I mean, if you knew this is the max they can charge and you get a thing and it's 15%, right away you're going to go, what is this? So normally, construction can run anywhere from 5 to 10. So this ended up at the end about 7 to 8%. So we felt also that that was a good measure that it worked. And it was fair to them and it was fair to us. So I hope that helps a little bit more with explaining how we go through arriving at a final cost.
Alderman Maladra still has the floor, then Brown, then Singer.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, there's a lot of back and forth that takes place. Did this all take place after engineering and design and prior to construction, or does it take place throughout? I'm trying to figure out why, you know, in spite of all the games and tricks they were playing with you, you would still choose to stick with the same firm you work with in design.
Well, part of my experience is, fortunately for me, my husband does this full-time for his job at IDOT, so I know from listening to him and how he's handled it at his work that this is very common. And maybe it's like how you buy a house and you negotiate high, and or you throw in low, the seller's high, and eventually you meet. Unfortunately, this seems to, from my listening to him, that's been his experience also, is they come in high, you come in low, and you meet somewhere. But again, I think the percentage and those hours are the critical point. You know, you want to say, yes, the hours are fair, and the percentage is something that's to be expected. It's not one person coming in low all the time.
Right. No,
it's always
I understand.
Like this.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Alderman Brown, then Alderman Singer.
I presume in the end this becomes a fixed price contract. There's no credit for less hours or change orders for more hours?
That's an interesting asset, because when I first got here, there was an older engineering contract like this where the engineer had come back and said, we expect you to pay more than what the contract was, and they tried to justify their extra hours. And I imagine, if for some reason something extended the project and they had to put in an extra 4 months on it, then you would have to extend the cost, because this is all based on a certain length of a project. So I would say there might be instances where the cost could go up, but they would have to justify it. And in that case, we could not justify their extra cost, so we denied it.
So change orders can be negotiated, but if they manage to do it in less hours, they reap the profit, as they should.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Pam, thank you so much for that explanation. I think it was very clear and precise. You know, I've always been under the impression, when we've dealt with these kinds of federal contractual obligations, that those numbers had been determined, predetermined by the government's stating, in a sense, what to be done and what the costs would be. But that certainly doesn't play a role here at all, does it?
No. What happens is they give you a form that shows, here's what we pay our people, and that's what you pay them based on the hours that you've decided upon. And if you look on the form, there's actually an overhead cost that they apply to IDOT, and IDOT calculates. Each firm has a different overhead cost, so their direct costs are then multiplied by that overhead cost, and each firm can be different. So
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Pollack, then Alderman Dantino.
Thank you, Mayor. Pam, and thank you for your explanation. This firm, Engineering Enterprises, Inc.
Sorry about that. Have they done business with the city before?
From what I can tell, looking at the records in our office, they seem to have done business with the city for quite some time. They seem to be a well-established firm. And so I would say yes, that they've been around for a long time.
So I'm surprised, and I think as Alderman Maladra stated, you know, the games and tricks that they are playing. I'm a little disconcerted that if someone who's done so much business with us in the past is appears to be taking advantage of us, and if it wasn't for your sharp eye, you know, perhaps we'd be paying more. So thank you for keeping an eye on that.
Thank you. I do want to mention, though, that I do believe that this is pretty common, and I didn't take it that they were coming in to try to get one over on us as much as this is how business is done. And you just have to look out for, you know, your employer and cut costs.
Which is which goes to my point from last week, and that is, and I certainly recognize that because it's a professional service contract, it need not be required to bid. But again, I would encourage competitive bidding when possible. Thank you.
If I could, Mr. Mayor, I guess that's a good lead-in from Alderman Pollack. Professional services contracts can be bid out. The state law allows as an exception if you have experience with a professional engineer, a professional land surveyor, a professional architect, you can avoid the, if you will, the bidding or the proposal process in those events if you have a good experience with that professional firm. So that's the state of this case.
So may I? So would it be proper then, instead of seeking another bid, perhaps having more than one in terms of request for qualifications and RFQ?
Well, I think that Pam's point was that in order to have some continuity with this project, you were trying to keep the same engineering firm who had done the designs and the planning with the construction, so that there is that continuity. To bring somebody new on board would be an unusual process.
Increase the hours.
And yes, and as Mary says, probably increase the hours.
All right. Thank you.
Alderman Dantino?
I guess my question was just asked. I was going to ask if you should be negotiating with more than one contract engineer at the same time, but I think that was answered.
And just for the record, I think everyone knows this as well. EEI was a firm founded by Mr. Michaels, located in beautiful Sugar Grove, Illinois. He's got an extraordinary reputation, does a lot of work in the Fox Valley, and is really beyond reproach. But we know that in the business world, sometimes it's a matter of dollars and cents, and oftentimes we haggle over exactly that. So we're glad you're haggling on our behalf.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Anyone else? Questions for that strange lady from South Street we call Pam, who came by today? We could have had a record here, Pam, but you decided to talk so long.
What is the record?
Well, Ralph, you'll never know, will you?
Apparently not.
You were done before you walked in, Ralph. Interrupted the record.
Right. Any other questions or comments? We do have a motion and a second on item 11A. Mr. Clerk, please take the roll.
Chuck Brown?
Aye.
Ralph Dantino?
Aye.
Dorothy Flanagan?
Aye.
Sam Hill?
Aye.
Craig Maladra?
Aye.
Richard Marks?
Aye.
Ray Pollack?
Sorry.
Nay.
Robert Piper?
Aye.
Brent Singer?
Aye.
Don Vogelsberg?
Aye.
Folks, we jumped on to item 13, new business. We only have a dude in a red shirt who must be the reporter, and Zach. We're going to turn to Zach first. Zach, any new business for us, man? And you're covering for what, Field and Stream? Or?
Republican newspaper.
Not familiar.
Introduce yourself.
Anybody else familiar with him? This is Frank, man.
I know Frank.
This is Frank the Tank.
No, Frank's a
Free Public Newspaper.
Vines Villas.
Republican
newspaper. Oh, okay. Right, Vines Villas.
Ellen, anything good for us tonight? No?
I have a question, Mr. Mayor.
Hey, hold on. I'm not there ready to do yet.
Oh, Singer's up there.
Yeah, Singer had his hand up first.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And Flanagan.
And
on Veterans Day, which is Wednesday, November 11th, the American Legion Post 75 is going to have its color guard and give its traditional rifle salute at State and 3rd Street in Geneva at 11 a.m. And also, you are all cordially invited on Veterans Day at 1 p.m. to attend the unveiling and dedication of the Persian Gulf War plaque of the Kane County Veterans Memorial Wall of Honor at the Kane County Government Center, 719 South Batavia Avenue in Geneva, Illinois, to pay tribute to those Kane County citizen soldiers who gave their full devotion in defense of this country. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Singer. Alderman Flanagan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This weekend, Saturday, is the Geneva Beautification is wrapping up their 2009 season, so we're going to be cleaning our beds, the flower beds. And I always have to make myself...
We want to explain to the citizens of Geneva.
Terrible. The flower beds in the Geneva area, downtown area, and if anybody is wanting to help, 8 o'clock in the morning, meet at the post office, and somebody will assign you to a garden bed to help clean it out. Also, this weekend is our last opportunity. Well, it's our raffle for the quilt. We had a quilting bee that actually donated our quilt to us, and so we've been raffling tickets off for it. And it will be raffled off this Saturday at 9:30 in front of the post office. So if anybody wants to buy those last-minute tickets, it's this week. The quilt is on display at 316 West State between 3rd and 4th in the window. Tickets are available at that shop and also at City Hall. Or you can call me at 208-0279, and I'll be more than happy to come over and run over there and give you whatever last-minute tickets you want to. So this is a very important weekend. It's wrapping up our season, so I thank everybody who volunteered and who's was generous enough with their time and who have made Geneva look beautiful as usual and as always over the years. I thank them. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Well said. Anyone else before I have to recognize Hill? Okay, Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I must have overlooked, didn't look at the agenda very closely when I was previewing this meeting, but the discussion we had last week at the Committee of the Whole about the SSA 1 and the possibility of excluding certain property wasn't brought up tonight, and I'm wondering if that's going to come back. Maybe at a committee the whole meeting in 2 weeks.
Yes, you should have gotten an email from Paul Evans with some additional background information, and in that email he's explaining to everyone that it will be on the City Council agenda on November 16th.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Pollack and Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Mayor. The last couple of weeks, I'm sure, as everyone's aware, we've been inundated with phone calls regarding an odor permeating town here. And my understanding is Bridges Norton is doing their due diligence to rectify the problem. Do we know if there's been any testing done as to what we can convey to those who ask us as to what it could possibly be that's emanating? And what I'm asking is are they harmful odors or harmful...
I thought it was interesting that the odor came and went the same time Ralph D'Antino did, so I think that's kind of strange myself, but no?
Really?
There's an email from Mr. Renzelli, actually, in your package.
There is,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It just arrived an hour ago?
Right.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
An hour or so ago?
It's
rancid oil in the machine.
Yeah. And I recognize that it's rancid oil, but regarding those who have asked, well, what exactly is it, and is it hazardous? Gosh, don't know.
The short answer is no, it's not. Bridges Norton not only took the extraordinary action of admitting that, in fact, it was, I should say, that they were culpable for the odor, they also hosted a community meeting explaining exactly what transpired. They've been in constant contact with Chuck Lencioni, Dick Unch, Mary McKittrick, and others. The most recent email from Mr. Lencioni explains exactly what has transpired and what's going to be done in order to remediate that situation. There is a woman, I don't know if she wants her phone number given out or not, but you can certainly contact City Hall, and there is a young lady at Bridges Norton who is fielding calls from residents so that she can speak directly to these individuals who are concerned with straightforward answers about all that good stuff. So,
what do you know if there was a report done or testing done to identify what the particulate was and whether or not it's
They know the oil involved, and at the meeting with the neighbors, they did hand out the material safety data sheets for that particular oil, and it is perfectly innocuous. It's just that when the oil gets a little rancid, it smells like rancid oil in your refrigerator or in your frying pan would. But it is a perfectly, they were very straightforward and handed out Xerox copies of the material safety data sheet to all the people who were interested. So
great.
They were very upfront about what was going on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, check your email. Should be a note from Lencioni.
Yep, I saw that.
Okay,
thanks.
Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Both Alderman Hill and myself have been getting a few phone calls about leaf collection, and I have no doubt that the constant and continuous rains in the month of October has slowed the city crews down, because they're certainly behind where they'd hope to be at this point, although I don't have any up-to-date information, and I was wondering if someone might have more up-to-date information than I do. Thank you, Ms. McKittrick.
Thank you, Alderman Brown. Yes, our crews have been delayed due to the rains. They did work on Saturday to try to catch up. We have three leaf machine trucks and then a fourth one that we've used as backup because it's older and it's not in the best of shape. And this past week, in addition to the ongoing rains that we've had to deal with, two of the machines have broken down out of the four, so they've been trying to keep up with two machines plus the rain. So they did work late on Friday and as well as Saturday to try and catch up. So they are still trying to catch up and will continue to do that.
I could still encourage people to keep those leaves out of the gutter.
Yes, please.
On an eyeball of my neighborhood, there's about half the people are still not being careful to rake leaves out of the gutter. And with the rains that may come again, all it does is clog up our sewers and cause the city more expense through its public works department. So you're helping yourself and you're helping your tax bill if you do what we ask, which is to please keep those leaves out of the gutters, which form the water runoff during heavy rain events. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I had a concern from a resident on Maple Lane earlier today at 11:20 a.m., and he just responded back to me indicating that his leaves have been picked up. So they're close to the end of that pickup for the first week. But and I'm embarrassed to admit that four homes out of the 40 in my subdivision had leaves in the street after I handed out flyers and we put it on TV. And it, I don't know why people don't read things and take care of their responsibilities with their property and being good citizens. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Anyone else? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Whoa.
Second.
Second one's by Tantino. I'll give the motion to Piper since he's the biggest and baddest of them all. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.